Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the New Africa Business Association Network Marketing and Business and Community Group Investments. Tonight we're going to defer from our regular business show, and of course this is Veterans Day, so we're going to be honoring our veterans, and we'll be back with tonight's host, our commander, Brother Lyndon Bilal, and we will be hosting a number of different veterans, so as they come on throughout the evening, we'll be introducing our veterans and having our veterans to introduce themselves, and our listening audience will be able to ask any questions that they wish to ask them. We'll be back with tonight's show in just one moment.
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing. Y'all.
Welcome back to the New Africa Business Association Blog Radio. Again, we're introducing our vets tonight. I think before we bring on our host, I think we got our commander for our post number one. Brother Stanley, did you come on?
Assalamu alaikum.
Well, Brother Stanley, we all are on here together, so eventually we will be all just chatting as we go along. I am going to give us back to our host now, Brother Lyndon Bilal.
Assalamu alaikum. Good evening to everyone, the listening audience, and the host, Brother Bilal Bynum, as well as Brother Aziz Abdul Shahid. And thanks for thinking of having this radio program tonight. First, I want to begin with A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitanir Rajeem, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluhu. So, with that said, I am Lyndon Bilal, and I am the host today for this very auspicious program in which we are recognizing and celebrating our veterans who have served in the defense of this nation, first serving God, the Creator, and then serving the community or the country. So I have been involved in the military since 1980, in which I'm from Gary, Indiana, which is my hometown. I was not a Muslim when I joined the military. However, I had been exposed to Islam, so it was coming. But at the time when I embraced Islam was a few years or maybe a year and a half after I had joined the military, where I wholeheartedly embraced Islam and changed my name. So my journey in the military, I think about it and I can write a book on it. And I'm sure all of us can, because in a way we're serving God and country like every other person in the military is doing or should be doing. But as Muslims, we also have a special role because we're ambassadors. Because we don't have the big numbers, and we definitely stand out because our way of living, our way of life, our diet, our sincerity in prayer, it is very easy to see when you're in a culture like the military, in which drinking and hanging out on paydays, with the women and those type of things, or in the case of women, because I don't want to ever exclude women, but nevertheless, we stand out. So I know we have right now on the phone with us the post commander of MAVA post number one in Washington, D.C. That's Brother Stanley Mahdi. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
And we also have Brother Shelton Hassan from North Carolina, who is a veteran as well, on the phone with us. Assalamu alaikum.
Waalaikum assalam.
So, as I said, we can all write a book on our own experiences and journey in the military. But I don't want to bore anyone with just my story. So we're going to hear from these brothers and as well as anyone else who calls in and want to make some comments. It was interesting, Brother Bynum, when you opened the show, you played the song War by Edwin Starr. And we know that it's a very popular song in our culture. It came out, in the late 60s during the Vietnam era. It was sort of a theme song to end the war. And we need to make it clear that most of us didn't go into the military to fight in a war, to kill other people. Our champion, Muhammad Ali, he made it plain, you know, when he said, why need to go over there and kill those people? They ain't done nothing to me. My enemy is right here, the one who's stopping me from living the life that I want to live as a believer in God. But, you know, it says, the song says, war, what is it good for? And then he answers it, so it's a rhetorical question. Absolutely nothing. But I took a social studies class in college, and my professor, who was a Muslim, I believe he was from Iran or something like that, and I mentioned those that cliche, war, what is it good for? Nothing. And he reminded me that some good may come out of war from time to time. And we know the Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, prayers and peace be on him, he didn't go to war or fight until he had no other option. And it's in the Quran where it tells him, you know, fight those who fight you when you are defenseless, and they attack you, and they are the transgressors. And that's the only time as Muslims that we have the right to fight. So, with that said, Brother Stanley, I'd like you to make a few comments. You can say anything about your military career, or you want to talk about the religion of Islam, or you want to talk about our program that we have coming up on Veterans Day Friday. Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
All right.
Go ahead.
Wa alaikum assalam. Assalamu alaikum to everyone. My name is Brother Stanley Mahdi. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm a retired Chief Petty Officer in the United States Navy.
What is that, E7, E8?
E7, yes, sir.
Okay.
I served during the years 1973 through to 1994. I was primarily an aircraft carrier sailor. I did logistics. I was a chief logistician. So I did contracts, supply chain, you name it, anything in supply, except I didn't do cooking or anything like that, but anything in supply, aviation supply or black shoe supply, I did that. And I retired in 94, as I said, July 1st. Since then, I've been a DOD contractor working with various contractors all over Northern Virginia and in Maryland. Doing the same thing I did when I was active duty, primarily contracts, contract closeout, reconciliation, and that sort of thing, and writing assertions, well, primarily looking at processes, writing assertions, proving or disproving the assertions, and that sort of thing. I've been a follower of this religion since I first. And this will predate a lot of you guys. Brother Bynum, you probably were around then, but I watched a program on public television in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, called The Hate That Hate Produced.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been following this religion ever since then. And I think that was in late 1959. I actually became a Muslim in 1979. I changed my name August 8th, 1980. I've been in and around Islam from that point, well, from 1959 till now, but intimately from 1979 till now.
Mm-hmm.
I have two sons who are currently in college. They're Muslim as well. I was married, and my wife was from South America. She is from Peru, but she passed away from lymphoma last year, February last year. And I currently serve in a position as commander, post one here in Washington, D.C., although I live in Northern Virginia. And that's my story, more or less.
Yes, sir. I'll be asking you a few questions as the program moves along. Thank you for sharing that with us. And brother, brother Shelton, I was surprised that you were on, brother. The last time I heard from you, you text me. You always sending me these great ideas, but I'm waiting for you to start a Mava post there and join up with the brothers and sisters in North Carolina. So what brings you on this program today? And tell us a little bit about your background.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum. I received a message from Abdul Rahman Sharif in Bennington.
That's the national quartermaster for Mava.
Right. Yes, well, he sent the message out, and I received it, and I decided that I wanted to be a part of this call-in tonight and participate. So I'm grateful for having it and giving us an opportunity to speak, give us a voice as Muslim American Veterans Association. I was introduced to Islam in 1975 in Norfolk, Virginia, in actually July. And at that time, I was in discussions with the recruiter, and I scored so high on my entrance exam, he was chasing me every day. Mm-hmm. So I was active with the Black Panther Party, and I was a militant. And Islam mm-hmm. saved my life. When I went into the temple and heard Islam, it was something that I had been looking for, and I didn't know it was there until I discovered it. And I was forever grateful to Allah for blessing me to see that and be a part of that. At that time, Imam Muhammad had just come into office, and he was removing the FOI, but I got a chance to see the real FOI in action. And I never seen a black soldier like that before, and I was so attracted to that. I admired what I saw and the discipline, the character, the structure of the FOI and the Nation of Islam. But I went into the Army because I was influenced by the Panther Party to go get that military training for the revolution so I could get killed, you know, get killed on American soil. But I joined right after Vietnam in August of 75. I went in the Army, and I was in artillery, field artillery. I was in the 24th Infantry Division, which is the original Buffalo Soldiers, 24th and 25th, the Buffalo Soldiers. And I served as a truck driver and ammunition for the artillery, field artillery. I went in 75 and I got out in 77. That was my military career. I probably would have stayed and became a career soldier, but my mother died when I was 14. My father died while I was active duty in the Army, and I had some challenges dealing with that. So I got out of the military on a hardship discharge because I didn't want to be a soldier any longer. Mm-hmm. But I was destined to be a good soldier. I was awarded Soldier of the Month, Battalion, and Division.
Well, that's great. You did it in such a short period, too.
Yes, sir. Yes, because my commander was a West Point cadet, Brad, and he pursued me because he saw good character in me. Mm-hmm. And he wanted me to go into officer cadet training. I missed my opportunity a couple of times. The first time, my father got ill, and I went home on emergency leave, and I missed the test date. The second time, I was 3 minutes late, and they wouldn't let me in the testing room. Mm-hmm. So I decided I didn't want to be one of them anyway. So I missed out on that opportunity, brother. But I'm forever grateful to Allah for blessing me with the opportunity to be trained as a soldier in the military, and to see what that experience was like when I met brothers from all over the country, because I was told by brothers that, well, the Black Panther Party say, don't go in the Navy because you don't find a lot of brothers to associate with. You be on that ship with all them other people. So they said if you want to be in the service with brothers, the Army is like 65% minority. You meet a lot of brothers from everywhere. And so that's what I chose that branch to go into. And I had a good experience with that, with the military. When I was discharged, just before I discharged, I joined the Nation of Islam, and I became a card-carrying member. At that time, we were still filling out and becoming card members. And I joined in Savannah, Georgia, where my duty station was. Mm-hmm. I joined there before I came back out of the service. So I came home a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
And I continued my worship service in North Carolina, where I lived at in Plymouth. There was no masjid, no mosque near there. I had to drive 85 miles every Friday for Juma, which was in Kinston, North Carolina. So I decided I need to move to that location because that road trip is something else, especially if I wanted to go for the hookup on Sunday. You know, the imam was having those long hookups on Sunday. And fourth Sunday at that time, we had our hookups. And that was a drive, man. And sometimes you had to spend the night because the imam would go down. He wouldn't stop, you know, those long marathon sessions. But alhamdulillah, I changed my name in 1977 from what it was to Shelton Hassan. So that's sort of my story. I'm grateful to the Marva, and I'm trying. This is my fourth year here in Charlotte, and every year I usually coordinate Veterans Observance Day at the Masjid on a Talim. We honor and recognize all the Muslim veterans in our community. And this year I won't be able to officiate because I'm traveling for a funeral. My wife's brother passed, and we're traveling to Buffalo for that tomorrow morning. So I won't be able to officiate this year. And I got another veteran brother to take the charge and the lead on honoring and recognizing our Muslim brothers. But I'm still making an appeal to them because Commander Bilal, I think we got about 12 brothers here in the Masjid, man, but they won't step up and join Marva and make a commitment to be a member. So I have to continue the pursuit to get them involved and start us a chapter here in Charlotte, inshallah.
Yes, sir. Alhamdulillah. Appreciate that. Well, what we do in Washington now, we have a breakfast every meeting once a month, and I think that's helpful to get some of the brothers and sisters out. And, you know, you just gotta stay with it because it's a lot of good that can come out of this organization to help the individuals and to help the community. And, you know, most of the individuals in the organization from my experience have been involved in the Vietnam era, a lot of them even in the Korea era. We have a large number of military service people now, Muslim, you know, second generation, third generation. I work at the Pentagon now, and I can look in the address book, and you see all kind of names. I see about 10 Bilals, you know, Abdul Aziz, Muhammad, Abdullah. So there's a whole lot of them. And Marva, you know, we try to do social media by being on Facebook, and I get people that go and like that Facebook page, several people every day from all over the world. And also, we write an article, a weekly article in the Muslim Journal, our institution, called the Marva Speaks. So we just have to be active and continue to promote the best of what we have. And I think the organization will eventually grow, but you know, I was never a member of the Nation of Islam, but a lot of things that I hear from the people from the Nation of Islam are good, like never leave your post until properly relieved. Mm-hmm. That's something we learn in the military, you know, those type of things. And so the discipline that we see in the military is the same thing that our religion calls for in us.
That's right.
One of the highlights in my military career, and maybe one of the greatest highlights, was in 1992 when I we had an organization called the Muslim Military Members. And not all of us were in the association at that time of, we didn't call it Imam W.D. Muhammad, we called it the American Muslim Mission. We were not all in that, nevertheless, and a lot of them were there from North Carolina at Fort Bragg that were not. But we hosted a luncheon for Imam W.D. Muhammad at the Pentagon. I was stationed there at the time, and Muhammad Ali attended that luncheon. And one of the main points Imam W.D. Muhammad gave in his talk was that he loved the discipline of the military people. You know, and that's what we, you know, as Muslims, we are obligated to be disciplined. And that's one of the greatest benefits, I think, from the military. You're actually in a system that demands that of you.
That's right. You know? That's right.
And as you said, you got these awards because you follow different policies. But it's a blessing to be able to think and follow the policies. Many times people follow them like robots because they haven't been taught to think.
Yes, sir.
But under the leadership of Imam W.D. Muhammad and this great religion of Islam, it's a very high regard and focus on being thinkers. So we can contribute more, you know, to our careers and to the military, to the country, et cetera. So I know Brother Stanley was at that luncheon at the Pentagon at that time as well, because we met around that time, around 1988, 1990.
Absolutely
and
correct.
And I'm so proud that Brother Stanley finally has joined MAVA and is active and doing a lot to promote the post and to build up the post right now, because I always make a point that post number one is our most important post. And the reason being is because it was the first post. It's where it was all founded. And the founder of the organization was a brother. And Brother Shelton, you may know Brother, may have known Brother Mujahid Muhammad.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so people who know him, he left a lasting impression. He passed away, I think, in around 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Or so, but he left a lasting impression on people, and it's we should teach that history because it's very important that we understand and know, and our children know for generations to come our history and our military history and this organization's history. And Mujahid was a POW in the Korean War for over 444 days, somewhere around there. And so he made a great sacrifice, you know, in serving in uniform in this country. And some of us have even given the ultimate sacrifice, you know.
That's right.
So unfortunately, yesterday, I think we have a new commander-in-chief that has no military experience
at all,
and no political experience, et cetera. But, you know, he attacked a Gold Star parent, and that's what helped, at least at the time, make people believe that his opponent, Hillary Clinton, would probably be the victor. He sort of catapulted her with those points because of, you know, you don't attack people who made the ultimate sacrifice like his son did in defense of this nation. That was a very unwise thing to do. So we want to honor and recognize all veterans today. And, you know, Friday is Veterans Day. Every November the 11th, it used to be called Armistice Day. Now it's called Veterans Day, and it's a federal holiday. And so at post number one in Washington, we're going to be feeding the veterans free meals. And we know that a lot of the restaurants around the nation, the franchises around the nation, have been doing this for several years. And now it's over 70 of them that offer veterans free meals on this day. And so now we can include Mava Post One as one of them. We want to give back. And also we're having a wreath-laying ceremony at the African-American Civil War Museum, which I'm looking forward to. It's going to be a real excellent event as well. And speaking of history, I went to the Civil War Museum and I bought a book called 117 Facts Everyone Should Know About African Americans in the Civil War. And again, this is some great history. And you know what they say about history: if you forget it, you're bound to repeat it. So we need to make sure we know this history so that, you know, we don't make any of the missteps that some of our foreparents may have made.
Brother Bilal, you know, you're making a very excellent point here, but at the same time, like you said, with the Commander-in-Chief that we just got into office, many of us haven't forgotten during the time when Martin Luther King was assassinated, many of us was right in battle. And
yeah,
many events happened in Vietnam that America doesn't know anything about. Only folks know what happened during those times are the Vietnam veterans. And so those of us who was in Vietnam during the time Martin Luther King was assassinated, we know that there was almost a race war in Vietnam. And it was our patriotism that kept a war from going on. Brothers, most of you guys remember those signs, do you not?
Yes.
Okay, so when we come back, we take a short commercial break, I'd like to know more about, because we are into a time where, yes, African-American patriotism is without question. But to come to a president that was just elected today, and you start talking about what has happened during the time we was actually in battle, but we kept our patriotism. So we'll be right back after a short break, and we'll continue to talk to our vets. Be right back in just a quick moment.
Bideman Associates Financial Planning and Insurance. Immediate annuities. Retirees, roll over your 401ks, TSPs, and pension plans into an immediate annuity. It will pay you a monthly income for life guaranteed. Please contact me for a free income quote today. At Bynum & Associates, we'll professionally mind your business. Visit us online at www.BynumAssociatesInsurance.com or give us a call at 202-288-5660 or 301-234-9090.
And welcome back to the show. Just to get this operation started, And then, brothers, we invite you to just join Brother Bilal and all the rest of us collectively. We got a half an hour to go, so we'll try to get as much information in as we possibly can. But just to give you some quick information on myself, I served in Vietnam from 1967-68, the Tet Offense. And I was a chaplain's assistant. 83 M10, the first African-American to ever be awarded the MOS as a chaplain's assistant. I actually say it with priests. I don't know how I got the MOS, but a colonel, a chaplain priest, got me that MOS, and he was leaving for Vietnam right after he had me to come in as his assistant. And when we when we got to Vietnam, I was assigned to another chaplain, and most of you know this chaplain. He got the Congressional Medal of Honor, Chaplain Leakey. I was his a service representative, and this was during the time of the conflict. But like I said, after the assassination of Martin Luther King, it was a very touchy times, and we have a whole bunch of African Americans, especially some of our commanding African Americans. Colonel Davis at that time, he hadn't received the star. He was a full bird colonel of the 199th. And what he had to do with saving, if he hadn't put those gunships up in the air after we had that agreements, there would have been a disaster for the American militaries, because most of our generals at the time was on R&R. But brothers, you know the story. Y'all join right on in. Brother Aziz, yeah. Especially.
Well, I'd like to make a comment. I don't know the African-American. And greetings to our listening audience, and I just want to welcome to the brothers and sisters.
Wow.
I'd like to make a comment on in our latest times, the history, when we had the Hurricane Katrina down in New Orleans, and when there was not really any law and order down there, it was an African-American general. Mm-hmm. That was assigned by the military to go down there, bring some law and order, and also be in charge of the operation of getting New Orleans under control and getting some services to the people there, you know, and there's for needs for survival and that. So we've been quite active in the military in recent times. It's just that people don't see that because we don't go around getting blowed up by the media and our services and our, that are not known to many people. So we personally know what we do. I served in Vietnam with the 5th Marines in the fire base Anwar, and I was the battalion armorer, fixed all the weapons from a...
Aziz, talk about that, because not too many African-American brothers get to be armors, or even get the MOS. We know the importance of that position, especially in combat, where you're talking about small arms fire and artillery fighting as a joint unit. It takes, if it wasn't for you guys.
Well, you know, I was fortunate, another African-American brother named James Williams from Norfolk, Virginia. I was in a special Marine Guard detachment in Sasebo, Japan. And while there, this is the naval base, Sasebo, Japan, we did security for the naval base, as well as it was a huge ammo dump outside of Sasebo in the mountains that were built by World War II American prisoners. And it was in the side of a mountain. We went deep in there, and it stored all kind of ammo there that the Navy would take down on ships, what we would call down south to Vietnam, and load it up. Well, the brother that was in charge of the armory there, I asked him, I said, how did you get that training? Because I was just a regular old laborer, a grunt, and all that kind of stuff. And he said, well, I went to school. So he says, I'm getting ready to leave in about a month. It was 6 months. He said, I'm going to be leaving. I'll ask the commander. He said, I don't have a replacement. I'll ask the commander, can we send you to school? And you take it. So I went and talked to the commander. He went and talked to the commander. I had a good record. I was a corporal at the time. And they sent me to armor school over in Okinawa, which they say is part of Japan today. I didn't know it at that time. It was just, we call it the Rock, Okinawa. Went there to school. I got to learn how to repair 106 recoilless rifles, which is almost like a artillery piece, flamethrowers, 50 calibers, 30 calibers, BAR 50 caliber, M14, 30 calibers, I'll use the name, 45, 38, 12 gauge shotguns, M16, AR-15s, all that. It's like I remember it today, like very clear. I have a few in my possession also, but I remember all that stuff very clear. And
so, brother, when we came under fire and we needed artillery placed in precise places in order to
I couldn't do that.
You know.
That was artillery people. I was a small arms person. That's why I said 106 recoilless rifle.
Okay.
It's almost the size of an artillery piece, but not quite as big. as well as 81 and 61 millimeter mortars, 60 millimeter mortars. I know how to fire all that stuff, and you know.
I brought it to your attention because, brother, those are guys I always wanted to shake the hands. Those artillery guys that could bring in that artillery.
Right.
And, say,
yeah, that was me, brother. That was me.
Yeah, brother Shelton, I was telling
brother,
that.
We could thank you for saving us.
Artillery people know about grid coordinates and stuff like that. And,
that's right. Yes,
and when
yes,
you're
sir.
Not on patrol, you have to call back to people
yes,
like the brother.
Goodness,
give him
brother,
a grid coordinates. And if he don't do it right, you're finished.
You absolutely
yep.
finished.
Brother, would you
brother,
please tell
you
us about
you
that?
How your comrade's life. You know, we all seen it in the movies where the coordinates is not correct and we kill our own soldiers.
That's right.
Yes, sir.
That's right. Yeah. But see, that's what this veterans program, Brother Bilal, go right ahead. We just want to throw some of the old concerns back because, like I said, Martin Luther King and many other events, there was never any justice or there was never any answers to those horrible events, but we as African Americans, we stood our ground, and ain't nobody beat us in Vietnam.
Go ahead.
We know what we had to do when we came home, but ain't nobody ran us nowhere.
Well, so were any
you know,
of you all drafted? Were any of you all drafted, or you all enlisted on your own?
I was drafted. Nowhere in the world I enlisted, but again, mm-hmm. Like you said, I did have some college. A credit at the time, so as a draftee, that got me into some places where a normal person wouldn't have gotten.
Yeah, so that's one of the differences of today, as well as you know, it's an all volunteer military, and
yeah, I'm volunteer.
Yeah, and like myself, I went into the military because I had graduated high school, and my father, he was a Korean War veteran, but it's no way in the world that he was going to let me stay there and not have a job. So I made the decision that I was going into get education and learn a professional skill in some career of electronics. And, you know, I think it was it was a great move I made because I was 18 at the time, and so as my life went on and I progressed and I embraced Islam, you know, things just got better in a sense,
yeah.
You know. So it allowed me to, you know, build a career and a life for myself. I did not retire. Did you retire, Brother Bilal?
Oh, no. Let me tell you, the same thing that happened to you when my term was up and they asked me to also go become, they wanted me to become the first chaplain after serving with Chaplain Lincoln. He got that Congressional Medal of Honor. They wanted me to become the first chaplain, but at that time I had about 30 days before my ETS date. And so when they took me to the career officer, of course, I was with the colonel, and the colonel I laid out a plan. They told me if I had signed these papers, they would send me to theology school up in New York for 4 years and make me an E6. So while I was there, I would come out as a captain, and they would give me a bonus of $30,000. I told them that they would have to do the same thing with me that they did for George Armstrong Custer. They would have to make my orders a brigadier general. Yeah, I signed the paper. I said, I'm going home.
Yeah.
And that's the way it's been from that day to this.
Yeah.
Well, I had a brother. My brother was in Vietnam, and he was on the front line in combat, and my mother died. My mother died from a heart attack. She was about to have a surgery, and they gave her anesthesia, and the anesthesia was too strong for her. She had a heart attack under anesthesia, and the Red Cross brought my brother home for his mother's funeral. She was only 39 years old, and when he came home for his mother's funeral, he came from the bush. He didn't go back. He went AWOL. So you know how the brother felt like he wasn't going to make it back anyway. And
right.
for him to come home to his mother's funeral was a really, really hit for him at 19 years old. So it blew him away, man. And he was the one that introduced me to Malcolm X because I was in the 7th or 8th grade. I think I was in the 7th grade. He gave me the autobiography of Malcolm X and said, "Read this book, boy." And I read it. And I read it, and I fell in love with Mr. Malcolm because his last name was Little, and that was my mother's maiden name, Little, so I just adopted him as a relative. I said, he got to be some kin to me. So I fell in love with him at that time, and I continued to read books that he would bring home. These are social conscious books that I was reading all the way through high school. My brother was my teacher in that area, that category of reading our history. And I was very astute in that. The teachers would take books from me every day because I would be reading those instead of reading the school books. But I would make sure I was passing the subject matter. And they say, you know, you could be an A student if you leave them other books alone. But, yeah, that was an interesting experience for me. But my brother got a dishonorable discharge, and President Carter gave him a pardon and upgraded his discharge from the dishonorable to a general. And he had Agent Orange in Vietnam, who died in 2004.
Yeah.
Now, another reason why I went in, too, other than my father telling me I ain't staying there if I ain't working, was the Iran conflict was going on at the time. And I had a fear that there was going to be a draft because there was talk about they was, you know, going to start the draft again. So I said, well, let me make my own choice before they make it for me. And I'd rather go into the Air Force. I didn't want to, you know, be in the Army, you know, shooting at people and getting shot at like that. So that's why I chose the Air Force.
Hold on, so you thought the Air Force didn't get shot at?
Yeah, not the same way. Not the same
not the
way.
Same way that we do.
Because
like,
see, I had
not,
a had
not
a neighbor.
Okay.
There was a guy who lived down the street from me who went into the Air Force. He was older. He was a few years older than me, and I sort of looked to him because he came out, got the GI Bill at that time. That was strong, and he went to school, and also I was interested in music at the time. And so I just saw something in him in the Air Force, and that's why, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to make my own choice. But speaking of a pardon, like your brother, you know there's a pardon going around right now that we have on change.org and wethepeople.org to pardon the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Imam W.D. Muhammad and 300 other Muslim men who were unjustly imprisoned because of conscientious objection status, because at the time the Nation of Islam would not allow them to go into the military. So the FBI rounded them up and jailed them. Imam Muhammad during the Korean conflict and many of the other ones during, I believe, World War II. And
correct.
So we have a petition going around, and those who are listening, I hope you can go to change.org and search under Elijah Muhammad or Imam W. Dean Muhammad and find that petition and sign it and share it with others, because the hope of this petition was to get President Obama as a gesture of goodwill to do this in his last days, and maybe he'll do it now since it won't be a Democratic president coming in. But we had sort of sat back and said, well, maybe we'll wait to Hillary to do it because we know Imam W. Muhammad and Bill Clinton were good friends. But I don't see the possibility of Trump wanting to show a gesture of goodwill that way. But, you know, Allahu Alam, Allah's always God. So, you know, we know that this is the right thing to do because these men should never have been in prison for their conscientious objection status. You know, Muhammad Ali, of course, is the one who most people know who was all charges were dropped. and he went on to be the most well-known person around the world.
That's right. Well, I did sign that petition. In fact, I'm going to suggest it to the brother on Sunday when we have our Muslim American Veterans Observance at the Masjid here in Charlotte, that we get all the brothers to sign, as well as the participants, ask them to sign that petition as well, inshallah.
Yes, sir. And in a few weeks at the American Islamic Heritage Museum in D.C., Muslim brother who was assigned by President Obama to look after Muslim affairs, who we have this petition, who it goes to every time we get like 100 signatures, I'll be meeting him for the first time on November the 27th, inshallah, at the museum. And so, I'm going to definitely try to push it forward. And maybe President Obama, like I say, he only got a few more months now. Less than 2 months, I believe, somewhere around there. He may do some things that many people didn't expect him to do because, you know, who knows when this time is going to come again when we have someone like him in that office.
That's right. That's right, bro.
Okay. Anybody can chime in. Brother Stanley, you can chime in now. Tell us about the program on Friday. Coming up.
Okay, we have a Veterans Day program scheduled for the 11th, which is this Friday. We have several speakers that Brother Bilal has petitioned to participate. So we're going to have a whole lot of speakers there. We're going to have the food stuff we're having is going to be very succulent. We have a lot of stuff. We have enough to feed between 100. We anticipate between 100 and 150 people to be there. So we have enough food to cover all that. The primary meats will be Cornish hens, baked Cornish hens, which we'll have 100 or 125 of. We're going to have fried fish. We're going to have string beans. We're going to have mixed vegetables. We're going to have assorted cakes. I don't know which kind. And we're going to have sweet potato pie and also refreshments.
Making me hungry already.
Don't worry.
Don't forget that thing.
I've been cooking all day. Okay, y'all, that's right. And bean pie. So you can see we're going to have quite an assortment of things to eat. And after after we feed everybody, we're going to do the Juma. Then shortly after Juma, we're going to proceed to the event.
African-American Civil War Museum.
Yeah, the African-American Civil War Museum. We're going to go there, and we're going to continue to carry on our service there. And then after that, we'll come back to the masjid, and we'll just greet, talk, and if there's food left, we'll continue to eat and that sort of thing. So it's going to be a very, very lively Friday, and it's something I'm really anticipating because the fact that I'm going to this museum and we're going to lay a wreath and all this stuff, this is like hallowed ground for me. This is something like I've never done in my life, and as far as African-American people are concerned. So I can't wait, you know what I mean? Every time I think about it, you know, tears well up in me because this will be the first time I've ever done anything like this. So I can't wait until Friday.
Well, this will be the third time that the Post has done it. The other two times, the founder, Mujahid Muhammad, was part of the matter of fact, he laid the wreath at the last one I was at. And also, it's a new book out called Muslim Americans in the Military, Centuries of Service. And I just got a shipment in today of them, and we'll have those books available. And there's a picture of me and Imam W.D. Muhammad in this book from 1992 at the Pentagon, as well as it talks about the history of Muslims who were enslaved at the time, you know, from Africa, all the way up to today, and it's a real good, concise history of the service that Muslims have done, have given to America. So we'll have those books available. We'll have some T-shirts, Mava Post One T-shirts. We'll have some lapel pins, some CDs, DVDs. And, you know, it's going to be an opportunity for people to support the organization. And, you know, because a lot of people like to thank veterans for their service. And we appreciate that. Whenever someone comes up to me and says, thank you for your service, I can feel the sincerity in them. And, you know, that's a big thing. And so many veterans today, especially African Americans, the stories I hear about them not getting their entitlements, this is another focus that we have with the Muslim American Veterans Association. So we have to get people trained to be service reps. I know Brother Aziz was one of the first ones at the post that was volunteered himself to become a service rep. And hopefully, you know, you still got that desire and, you know, you can maybe still become a service rep and also help some of the new ones, young ones coming up to let them know what that's all about.
I look forward to serving, brother.
Yes.
All right, we got about 4 or 5 more minutes, brother. So again, we all are on this thing collectively. So again, just speak freely. Don't wait for anybody to call your turn. Just say what you want to say in the next 3 or 4 minutes. And if I don't get a chance to say anything before we close out, I definitely we look forward. We've been on this radio station. We want to thank the more better man. Because he's really the one who started these radio broadcasts. Remember, back in the days, Aziz, more better man on Veterans Day would definitely have his veterans there. So it's something that we wanted to continue, and we wanted to definitely, in his honor, because he served as a Marine very proudly.
Yes.
So most of us remember the more better man and the more better man show. But all of you brothers, if I don't get a chance to thank you, I enjoy, you know, being a part of this association. And we know we veterans, we love being around each other. Like I said, you guys open up. We got 2 or 3 minutes. Say what you want to say. When you hear the music come on, then we'll be closing out. So thanks for your service and say whatever you like to say in the next 3 or 4 minutes.
Well, thank you, brother. I appreciate that, and it's been a pleasure for me to be a part of this discussion this evening. I want to say I retired from the United States Postal Service. I gave 32 years of service there, and I was a co-coordinator of the Veterans Day observance at the post office for about 7 years. And I like that because 1 out of 4 employees was a veteran in the post office, and one that I worked in Detroit. So we had a lot of veterans employees there, and it was a real good program that we coordinated and put on to acknowledge them and, you know, recognize them for their time served in whatever craft or whatever branch of the military they were in. So I was inspired tonight to hear the program that's scheduled for Friday. So I pray that Allah bless me to plan a bigger and better event in Charlotte next year, similar to that, what you're doing. And by that time, I hope that we have a chapter already here in Charlotte, inshallah.
Yes, sir.
And with that said, we have one brother right here in our studio. We want to introduce Bill Tinsley. Introduce yourself before we close out.
Yes, my name's William Tinsley. And just like the brother William Tinsley, I did 40 years with the Postal Service, and I remember the programs. We would have a program that would give us all a certificate and recognize us, and it was very heartwarming at the Postal Service for the brothers that were there.
That's right.
For the brothers.
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Uh-huh.
to me. Oh, oh.
She believed that a number of people, like in Alabama, they didn't go out and vote. Yeah, they didn't go out and vote. You know, well, you know, nigga, what it's gonna do? It ain't gonna mean
again,
nothing.
Again, like you